Blog Talk Radio.
Now, PW Torch brings you the Wade Keller Pro Wrestling Post Show. It's time to talk this week's WWE Monday Night Raw.
Darren, that was one heck of a main event. They were selling the idea that Kevin Owens was surviving and just marveling at his recuperative powers and survival in this 20-plus minute match against Jey Uso, to the point where it almost seemed like they were telecasting, well, he's going to lose, but man, what a fight he put up, especially with what he went through the night before, and with a sore back that was giving out when he went for the pop-up powerbomb. But at the same time, they're building up Kevin Owens for a match against Roman Reigns. They're not going to have him lose clean to Jey Uso. So I was kind of worried, oh, we're going to get a finish where, you know, Sammy in the end spoils Kevin Owens' rally. But instead, they gave Kevin Owens the clean win. What did you think of the story that they told in that match as it kind of related to their larger goals? Just wanting to portray an exciting main event on TV, because that isn't always just a means to an end. It's also an end in and of itself with the money on the line with the TV revenue. And then also just everybody at ringside for the Bloodline, in particular, Sami Zayn, who had declared, obviously allegiance to Bloodline, and Kevin Owens saying earlier, he's done with Sami. He doesn't want to really be around him anymore.
Yeah, I thought they did a really good job, because when they announced their match initially, I said, oh, well, of course Owens is going to go over, and, you know, because they have big plans for him, I would think. But as the match progressed, it was a really good match, as you were saying. The more that it went on, I thought Jey Uso legitimately might actually win, maybe with some outside interference or something like that. But he was put over so strongly that I really started doubting the end, which is a good thing. And Owens emerged on top and got through with the stunner and everything with a good ending. So it went to a dramatic conclusion where things were kind of in doubt for a bit, and I think they did a good job, because I was convinced that it was just going to be a no-brainer, but they did a good job of blurring the lines.
Yeah, WWE right now, and you know, Corey Graves in particular, the way he's produced, and I'd say the downside to Corey Graves is he's not always consistent in what he advocates for or what impresses him. But when it's time to put over a main event, Graves hits those beats. He knows good announcing includes some really key talking points to emphasize what you just talked about, Darren, those and what I talked about too, the emotional ups and downs and roller coaster and building up certain expectations and raising the stakes and making us feel that what's happening is important. Sometimes it can be a little cartoonish. I felt he bordered on that with his sort of breathless exclamation of how is Kevin Owens doing it. But, you know, the audience he's catering to isn't you or me entirely. You know, he is going for more novice fans or people who are more casual viewers. And sometimes you got to go turn it up to 11 a little. Maybe you have to turn it to 11 to get them really engaged. But if you're going to turn it up to 11, be sure to hit the right beats in your commentary. And those are there, you know, whether it's all production meeting notes or his instincts once he's kind of told, you know, here's the story we're telling and here's how I want people to feel in the end. And here's how we want them to feel, at what's at risk and who's fighting valiantly and what is an outrage and all that. He filled it in during that 21 minutes I thought that Kevin Patrick turned it up a notch maybe this week, especially since he finished in second place to Jimmy Smith in our poll of who do you want announcing Raw last week. Adnan Virk finished a distant third, but I think last I checked, Jimmy was edging out Patrick. So Patrick stepped it up this week. I'm sure totally inspired by that. But yeah, it felt like a big deal main event. They took their time with it. You know, it took pretty much the whole half hour of the show. Last half hour of the show, counting ring introductions. And, by the end, I just felt like it was an episode worth watching for a variety of reasons, but it had a main event that felt like there was a backstory. They were fighting for something, and it didn't feel like, well, let's just pluck two people from the War Games match and have them fill 20 minutes of TV time. I give a real thumbs up to the main event. And also, it's a good step forward for Kevin Owens as they frame him, and as he frames himself in promos, as somebody who should be on the radar of Roman Reigns.
Exactly. Right. And I like that they gave them a good, it was a little bit less than a half hour, but they gave them plenty of time to have a match. I think Jey Uso has really stepped up when he's called on to be a singles competitor. He is they call him Main Event Jey, but he lives up to that also. And I thought that was very respectful to give them that kind of time. And this wasn't just a throwaway match. And just by them indicating that they had a half hour to go indicates that these are two big time guys and we want to allot the proper time to let them tell their story. And I think they did an effective job of filling that time. And so I'm looking forward to seeing where this goes. That they're drawing it out very slowly. And this is just another progression in the story.
What do you think of Sammy tonight?
I thought he was good as always. He's settling in. I think he's all in for the bloodline. There's no doubt where, you know, before there might have been some gray area. He's definitely in there, and he did a good job of telling why he turned and why he was tired of Owens. And so I think he's solid. I mean, we can kind of see what might happen down the line, but for now he's all in. And I think he's continuing to do his job very well. And on a comic note, I like the dancing and stuff and the handshakes and all that kind of stuff. So that continues as well. But he's doing a good job.
Having Kevin Owens stand there and talk about their past and to say, you know, I'm happy for you. You know, you've found a place that you belong. And but then to end with, you know, but you're still not blood. No matter how many times you say it and they say it, you're still not family. And you have to remember that. You know, it went from sort of Sammy thinking, oh, how nice of KO to be happy for me with all we've been through, to speaking the difficult but ever true truth, which is, you know, Sammy is a guest in that family. He's not family. And Sammy, I think, just his acting is so good. I mean, his facial expression when KO said that was, you know, that's not true. But his expression also said, but I know deep down you might be true and I don't want to admit that to myself. Like, I'm not projecting. Mm-hmm. Like, he conveyed that. And, you know, it was, that's not true, but I know it might be true. And it just, the it is. I mean, this is not news. This is not, like, a novel thing to say. You know, we've been saying it for months now. In fact, maybe, you know, over a year, the bloodline storyline, just Jey Uso and Roman Reigns in particular, and then adding Sammy to the mix, even going back to the Thunderdome era, is some of the best stuff that's ever aired on professional wrestling television. Mm-hmm. And the what we saw last Friday, what we saw Saturday with the backstage segments, with Roman really rising to the occasion, like, it's just, it's phenomenal. I mean, is this the best thing in wrestling today? It is. Like, I mean, it depends on what you look for in wrestling. I mean, if all, you know, different people look for different things. I will say, though, in terms of what matters in terms of a U.S.-based national/international company and what they're trying to do in terms of having a faction that fills TV time on both major shows and pay-per-views with a tag team and a singles champion who hold both belts, they're just in a kind of kayfabe storyline way they're dominant in an acting and main event segment and weave throughout the show way. I don't know if there's anything ever been anything better. And if there is, it's not by much and it's subjective. This is like, I just continue to just marvel at how much detail work goes into it. Even just that, the Jey Uso Sami Zayn hug at Survivor Series. And now, the way Sammy reacted to Kevin Owens, the way that Jimmy and Jey and Sammy walked into the building, just gregarious and smiley and celebrating and giddy that they're all a family. And it has that too good to be true, too good to last vibe.
Yes.
Yet you don't know when that moment comes. And frankly, it could go any number of directions. I mean, Jimmy's the least likely to break away, but maybe Jey ends up regretting trusting Sammy and breaks away as a babyface. Maybe Sammy ends up seeing or discovering that he's not, that everyone's not as loyal to him as the cameras show, and that they're using him or laughing behind his back. And so he, you know, quote, grows a spine or stands up for himself. They also have Solo Sikoa lurking, mm-hmm. and he's this fascinating character. And then you have fans starting to cheer Roman, so you go, well, do we try to, you know, is there a chance Roman's going to be a babyface and it's going to be Solo as the, you know, kind of the new lead heel or any number of options? I mean, this could go so many different ways, and none of them would be, whatever they do, none of them will be inconsistent when you look back. There won't be any retroactive recalibrating of how we're supposed to see a scene. I think even if there's some pliability in how they get to where they're going, there's a sure-footedness and a high level of professionalism to telling the story in terms of acting, in terms of not overexposing them, but also not ever having a show go by where you don't, or a week go by where there isn't some development or reinforcement of the key factors, and just the camera angles and the way everything is framed. I'm marveling at this. This is top level, compelling pro wrestling programming, and everybody should learn from it in WWE, AEW, and anywhere. You know, you can't recreate it, but there's things that are being done in this storyline that can transfer. Just like, you know, you might not ever be a great piano player, but the greatest piano players, you can study what they did to be great at their craft, to be really good at what you do. Or, you know, whatever, pick anything. And this is that good. Like, this is something Tony Khan should be studying and sitting down with his team going, all right, we want to match this with the Elite. We want to match this with MJF. MJF should be watching this going, how can I be involved in something this good? And one last thing, Darren, I'll throw to you for any response. I also love that there's no social media. There's no catering to internet fans. There's no references to backstage crap that has nothing to do with the narrative on TV. You've got the Young Bucks going out there last week, showing up CM Punk, being unprofessional EVPs, if they're still EVPs. You know, who knows, because AEW doesn't tell anybody anything. They're out there, you know, just doing what they were doing. And it wasn't classy. It wasn't professional. It might be deserved in some people's eyes. But you have all this stuff going. You have MJF with all the nonsense he's been through this year and all the twists and turns and you know, shoddy aspects of what otherwise are a lot of times great performances. And no one's matching this, Darren. Nobody.
Agreed. And a lot of it is they pick the key people to play their roles to perfection. If I can go back to one thing about Sammy, when KO hit the line about you're not their real blood and you never will be, Sammy played it just perfectly. He does. It was very subtle. It wasn't cartoonish because he could have just blew the whole thing.
Yep.
But it was very subtle, and he kind of sold it like, maybe you're right. And I could just see in my head them playing this whole 10 seconds right before that WrestleMania package, before they do the tag team match. Like, I'm looking back, and there was that moment where KO planted that seed that he's not their real blood. And we will be seeing that line again at some point in a promo package before a big match. But everybody's playing their role so good. And even when Paul Heyman and Roman Reigns aren't there, the rest of the guys, as they did tonight, play their roles to perfection. So, I mean, a great job by everybody.
There was like this panic or, you know, fear or criticism of, oh, Roman Reigns has a new contract and he's not going to work as many dates. And this is one of those cases, and I haven't always thought it was the case with The Rock or Brock Lesnar, Undertaker, part-time people. This is actually working to the benefit of the bloodline because of his, how many people are, you know, he's the sun and all the planets are revolving around him. And we're taking Roman, you know, sometimes 2 out of 3 weeks, sometimes 1 out of 3 weeks, but Roman shows up and things have happened since he's been gone. And we're left waiting, wondering, what's he going to think? How's he going to react? And It adds to the story that he's not always there. Like, he wasn't needed this tonight on Raw.
No.
And everything worked without him. And it also gives a chance for the bloodline to not be singularly defined by Roman and everyone else. It gives other people a starring role. We've had Jimmy, you know, come up with their catchphrase of, you know, the bloodline is in your city, as opposed to, you know, acknowledge me. And so they've got their thing that they do when Roman's not around. Yeah, it's so good. I feel bad for people who would love this, who, you know, have checked out and aren't watching it, who have been WWE fans over the years, because it's just, you know, it's just been that good. And part of what makes it good is having to wait, you know, 4 or 3 days in between shows, or 7 days sometimes when Bloodline's not on Raw. And you have these days that go by where you get to think about it and talk with other people about it. You know, if you just watched it, a compilation, it wouldn't have the same effect, because it's that speculation, you know, and ruminating on things that adds the anticipation to then the payoff to it. So, yeah, just great stuff tonight. Even Jay, you know, studying his face when, you know, Sammy was talking to him, and everyone's like, we're all on the same page, and you're studying Jay, and you're like, and you trust Jay's acting now. Like you said, they're not cartoonishly overreacting. You trust their acting. You trust that they've gone over this. And is Jay really on board, or is he second guessing it? Is there still a hint of, I don't know if I should trust Sammy? I don't, you know, like, you're studying their facial expressions, and I love when you get rewarded for that attention to detail.
We have one other point about that I really like that they're doing with Solo is you don't know which way he's leaning.
I know.
And in fact, yes, right before he was supposed to join in on the hug, like, was he going to actually do it or not? Then they cut to Owens, which was a good move, because it's still, you know, ambiguous. We don't know which way he's headed, and it could go any kind of way. Maybe, as you point out, maybe he'll be the new leader, you know, and replace Roman or something like that, or maybe he'll just fall in line or whatever and be like the, you know, the muscle or whatever. But it could go a lot of ways.
Yeah, are we going to get KO and Sammy against the Usos? If so, is it in the 2023 calendar year, or do they milk this thing longer and have a couple other sort of quote payoffs before Kevin Owens re-enters the picture? Or I shouldn't say re-enters the picture, but sides with Sammy against the Usos. Do we get KO against Roman first, and then later we get Sammy and KO together? We just don't know. It can be so many things, but I'm glad you brought that up, because that was another just great moment on the show where, you know, the music interrupts a key moment. Mm-hmm. And is Solo going to join Jimmy Jay and Sammy if they invite him to join in the hug? And you're like, is he going to do it? Is he not? And right as he was about to either do it or not do it, boom, the music hits and we don't know. I think it was Corey Graves who was like, no, like, he's like acknowledging, you know, that we're about to find something out and you ruined it. So great stuff. Okay. Let's pause and then introduce the show and give out the phone number and continue this conversation. This is the Wade Keller Pro Wrestling Post Show for Monday, November 28th, 2022. I'm Wade Keller, the host of the program, the founder, editor, publisher of the Pro Wrestling Torch Weekly Newsletter, 1,800 issues and counting. Most of those, vast majority, are available on our VIP website. If you want to read back issues going back to the late 1980s with major event coverage, star ratings, match analysis, hard-hitting editorials, long-form interviews in the pre-podcast era with some of pro wrestling's biggest names, TV reviews, and breaking news, along with backstage news. So much cool stuff to just dig into. Your favorite era or eras you're curious about, our contemporaneous coverage of wrestling going through all the 90s and the two decades so far and counting in the new millennium is online. So go VIP, everybody. pwtorch.com/goVIP for lots of perks. That's one of them. I'm also the host of this, the Post Show, and also the Wade Keller Pro Wrestling Podcast. The plan is for Rich Fan to join me tomorrow on our Blue Logo Show, the flagship, and we're going to talk a lot of WWE, AEW, and more, as is the case with Rich Fan, who is the star of the VIP exclusive Everything with Rich and Wade Show. So hopefully, if you go VIP, that'll be one of the appointment listening, one of the appointment podcasts. I'm like Corey Graves, you're stumbling over my words, looking disgusted with myself. That was so funny when Graves was caught on camera after he stumbled through his words, just looking disgusted with himself for messing that up. But I hope it becomes appointment listening for you. It's one of our signature series, and you can listen to us talk wrestling tomorrow. Download the show. Look for it tomorrow night on the Blue Logo Show. Just search Wade Keller to access both this, the Red Logo Show, and subscribe, and the Blue Logo Show. I'm also the editor of pwtorch.com, our website, and a host of a variety of VIP shows, including this past weekend's Survivor Series post-event roundtable. So hopefully you'll have a chance to check that out if you haven't yet. The other voice you hear is Darren Lilly from PW Torch. He covers Impact Wrestling both on our website and in podcasting on the VIP side of things. Darren, great to have you back. Great to have you talking Raw this time.
Thanks for having me. Glad to be here.
Absolutely. I hope everybody had a wonderful Thanksgiving weekend as we get back into the groove. Part of that groove is you joining us live, if you're listening to us live, and calling us and contributing to the show. Our phone number, if you want to join the program, is 347-215-8558. That is 347-215-8558. And when you call, push 1 on your keypad. That'll flag you on the switchboard and let us know that you want to join the conversation. We have a lot of people who have called up. Only one person hit the 1 on their phone, now up to 2. So feel free to join them. We'd love to hear from first-time callers and some of our regulars too, of course. You can also email the show if that works better for you. While you're watching Raw, Dynamite, or SmackDown, or right afterwards, send us an email with questions or your thoughts. That email is wadekellerpodcast@pwtorch.com. All right. So let's get the phone calls. And we will begin with area code 580. 580, thanks for calling. Go ahead and state your name and where you're calling from.
Chris from Oklahoma.
Hey, Chris. Good to hear from you. Thanks for calling. Are you a first-time caller or are you in a new number?
First-time caller. It's new. I haven't been on a PW Torch subscriber for like a few years. Just not coming back.
Yeah.
So,
awesome. Well, great to hear from you. Thanks for calling. Yeah.
Thank you.
Yeah.
I was just curious. I loved Raw. And that's, I can't believe I'm saying that because, I mean, used to drag. But ever since all this has been happening, with the Bloodline, it's like, it doesn't drag for me at all. The story is like fresh and everything. So I'm curious, WWE does not have a pay-per-view in the month of December, correct? Am I understanding that correct?
That is the current calendar, okay. Yep.
Okay, so do you think they'll have enough story to tell on between now and SmackDown to warrant that?
It's a good point because so much of television writing, Darren, is built around promoting the kind of to the rhythm of monthly events. And mm-hmm. since they moved to Peacock, there's less of an emphasis on, oh, if we do more events, we'll make more money. Or if we do more events, we'll have more, we'll get more subscribers for WWE Network. They're getting a flat fee now from Peacock. So there's not an incentive to even get more people watching the shows. And in fact, they're sort of, I think, thinking we want the shows to feel premium, therefore a scarcity of events without there being sort of half-hearted efforts or we're just going through the motions will make the events we have cause people to tune in. And that'll make Peacock executives happy because Peacock doesn't make more money the more you – well, they make more money the more you watch because of commercials. And so they want a bunch of people watching. But mostly they want people subscribing and watching other Peacock programming. And WWE, by making the events more scarce, less frequent, but feel more important, keeps appointment viewing, destination viewing. And so, you know, I kind of get the tendency to do that. They were going to do the day one pay-per-view or PLE, and they had, I believe, an arena scheduling conflict, and I think they were just like, let's just not do it. I'm not sure the latest on that, but they were advertising Royal Rumble, but nothing else on tonight's Raw. But in terms of the current calendar, there's nothing else other than the NXT special coming up on Peacock. The rhythm of television is built around we're going to build hype these other matches. Now it's going to be different for a while through the end of the year, but they are advertising Riddle and Elias next week, challenging the Usos for the tag team titles. We had Miz and Dexter tonight, and it was a payoff to, you know, a couple months saga that's been weaved into the show. So as long as they are planning ahead and they go, all right, the wheels are in motion for this, and instead of saving it for a PLE or, you know, for the Rumble in particular, we're going to deliver some of these big matches on television, but we're going to, you know, build them up for 3-4 weeks before they happen. And if they can do that with one or two matches per show, I think people will be satisfied. And in fact, the shows, as I said earlier, might feel like not a means to an end, but an end in and of themselves. And I think that's good for TV shows not to feel like an infomercial or where secondary stuff happens all the time. You've got to have premium content. But as we've seen, I think in particular with SmackDown, WWE wants to at least frame things that they do for the sake of Fox executives and viewers of SmackDown as being as important or nearly as important as a lot of what happens on a PLE. And, you know, they did that with New Day and the Usos. It's a match we've seen so many times, and do people really care, and does how long you've held the tag belts matter to everybody? Well, you can say all that, but the way they framed it was, this is the biggest match of the year. Like, they framed it as and touted it and celebrated it as this really big deal. And so, and I was, you know, I think it was right after the Saudi Arabia show, Crown Jewel. So they can do that again for the next, you know, month and a half, and I think they will. Darren, what do you think?
I think in reference to what Chris was talking about, maybe the bloodline, how they're going to draw that out, I was thinking maybe for the month of December they might scale back on the story and just kind of let it breathe and let them team up and interact to just establish that they're a team now and let that go on for a couple of weeks without any interruptions or distractions. And then you kick it into high gear for Royal Rumble, whatever they're going to do with that. Or is the Elimination Chamber, is that the one that's in Montreal? Because I believe I could see Owens challenging Reigns there, but I don't know if they want to stretch it out that long.
Yeah. I think they can. I mean, I am not worried about the bloodline seeming too drawn out because it just hasn't happened yet. The idea that Kevin Owens says, I don't want to have anything to do with Sami Zayn, makes me think he, you know, there's a good chance he might have something to do with Sami Zayn. You know what I mean? It's, you know, I mean, it doesn't necessarily mean that it won't happen. So they have that card to play. But like I said, they're advertising Riddle and Elias against the Usos. They can have the bloodline split off and do some short-term things with others. Kevin Owens and Solo Sikoa. They dropped hints of that tonight. You know, Corey Graves like, oh, and if anyone's not salivating at KO and Solo Sikoa after they had a brief stare down at ringside. So I think we're going to get KO and Sikoa maybe at the Royal Rumble, but I would bet it'll happen sooner. And that will be a major main event that they promote for television on one of the Mondays or perhaps Fridays, but in December. So I think they'll be just fine in that regard. I'll throw back to Chris for any follow-up on that or a different topic.
Yes, I was wondering, would you have, in that Quebec, Montreal, would you have it be Owens or would you have it be Zayn versus Roman?
Who are you said Zayn or Roman or else? Who else?
Zayn versus Roman or Owens versus Roman?
They're in the Elimination Chamber.
Both of them seem viable.
I think a few months ago, Chris, we were thinking of a Sami Zayn versus Roman Reigns match sometime either before or at WrestleMania, more likely before. And now, Darren, I don't think they want to move this that quickly with this. I mean, they might, but I think Sami and Roman against each other on opposite sides. I mean, to me, I'm based on the rhythm of what's happening and the material they have left to work with and the pace that I want to see things played out, I'll take SummerSlam or later at this point. I'm in no rush.
Yeah, the chamber is way too soon. In the back of my mind, I was thinking if this thing with the Rock falls through, and I honestly don't know what's going to happen there. Do you think they could plug in Sammy as a credible challenger for Roman if that falls through at Mania? At this point, as big as this thing is, I mean, that's a good fallback plan.
I think it's what fans – I mean, if I'm Dwayne The Rock Johnson, I'm not worried about anything in terms of his return, other than maybe fans resenting the fact that he's getting in the way of the Sammy storyline. But if The Rock is paying attention to what's going on, and I suspect he is, he will be wanting to be part of what's going on with the bloodline and Sammy in particular. I mean, you know, we think about the fun. We saw Hurricane Helms in a suit at ringside holding back Io Sky and Bayley on the show. Think about it, the fun that Rock had with Hurricane. Imagine, like, The Rock and Sammy interacting. And Rock, he's obviously doing a lot of movies, but he's a little out of practice and rusty when it comes to sort of the live pro wrestling style performances. Not that he can't be great at it, but he might not be. You know, I mean, with John Cena, you know, when he started doing promos with Cena, I think he walked in thinking, no one's ever going to match me and I can phone it in. And Cena brought it and I think outdueled him on the microphone in one of the, you know, it was a big shock to a lot of people and some are still in a little bit of denial about that. And I think Sammy is the type who isn't going to be trying to tear Rock down to prove anything. He's going to be who doesn't want to see Sammy reacting to the presence of the Rock, either in the Bloodline or opposing the Bloodline. That in and of itself is just a blast. I think Sammy versus I guess I haven't thought through the micro aspects of it. Like, what match if it's not Sammy Roman? Because I think the answer to the question, Sammy Roman, I think, is WrestleMania worthy, and I think fans would love it and embrace it. And if they think there's a chance they're getting it, and then The Rock shows up and ruins it, I think fans might be mad at Rock for it. So that was my original point that I never got to.
Mm-hmm.
So Rock's got to come in, but I also think Sammy and Rock interacting can be delightful and a lot of fun, and fans will just be, you know, excited. Hey, it's Rock, it's WrestleMania, of course. But what if it's not Sammy versus Roman? Even though I think it could be, but I don't think it will be, what does Sammy do come WrestleMania if they don't have a breakup of the Bloodline between now and then? Is there a worthy opponent for Sammy to a WrestleMania worthy opponent for Sammy? Is that where you go to KO versus Sammy one more time?
Wow, you could do that. I don't necessarily know if people want to see that, but at that point, you might have to put him on like the money. I think they're moving Money in the Bank back to Mania, not its own pay-per-view, if I'm not mistaken.
Yeah, that's been at least reported. I don't know if it's official,
right.
But certainly some word leaked on that.
So you could put him in something like that so he could get a win and please the fans.
And how intriguing. He can have a cash-in opportunity.
Then you add another layer.
Yeah.
Yes.
Walking around with a briefcase.
Right.
Cashing in for SummerSlam or you know, yeah, I mean, that and that might be, you know, one of the reasons they move the match to WrestleMania if they go through with that, is they just, that's a storyline beat in the Bloodline that they want to make with Sammy winning the Money in the Bank. Or it could be Solo Sikoa. I mean, Solo could win, and all of a sudden, like, Roman looks at him like, what are you going to do with that? And
right.
Solo just crosses his arms and stares and shrugs, like, you know, you'll find out, you know? Jay can win it, you know, and then Sammy starts side-eyeing and Roman starts side-eyeing Jay. I mean, it's just like, that's what I mean. There's so many ways they can play this.
Right. So they'll find something, but
yeah.
I'm intrigued to see which way they wind up going.
Chris, back to you.
Also, is it true that Roman and KO had issues after the Survivor Series? Have you heard that way?
I don't know. No, I don't know that. Darren, have you read anything on that? I haven't been able to verify anything.
Yeah, I heard that, I don't know, Owens accidentally kicked him or something like that, and
yeah,
maybe there were,
yeah,
like, some words, but I heard it blew over, so
yeah,
I wouldn't expect anything. They're both professionals.
it comes across to me as, like, if it's something, it can get blown out of proportion for – I don't want to cast the version. It is a classic clickbait article that can get amplified, but I haven't gotten details on it. But I it's one of those things where I think I might have heard more if there was more to it. So anyway, yeah. Chris, back to you again. Anything else you want to add before we move on?
No, thank you.
All right, cool. Appreciate it. Call again. All right. Up next, we'll go to Jay in Michigan, and you can be next too. Push 1 on your keypad if you've already called up, or give us a call, 347-215-8558. And again, push 1 if you want to be on the show. Jay, thanks for calling. What's on your mind tonight about Raw?
Hey, Wade, thanks for having me. What's on my mind is kind of, I want to build upon some of the things that you've discussed since I've been on the line. So, you know, I was having this conversation with my cousin, man, and, you know, there's fans that exist like him out there just, quote-unquote, feeling tired and worn out with the Bloodline winning and all this other stuff. And I find it to be just utterly ridiculous for anyone to be tired of the Bloodline and what they're doing, man. I think once this story ends, I feel like the business is going to take a dip, because this is the most compelling and riveting story and story arc with so many different layers that I've seen and been a part of in, God, man, decades. And anybody that just feels like, you know, this is what they're doing because it's working is just ill-advised, man. Like, this is not one of those moments where they put the belt on Cena just because Cena was Cena and nothing else was going. Like, Roman Reigns deserves to be in the role that he's in. Roman Reigns, and I love how you always mention, you know, with his part-time status, but how they build everything around the bloodline as to how he will react. I love how they do that, and I love how you point that out. But here's the one thing that I will push back when it comes to some of the stuff that you were just saying. I don't think people will have an issue with The Rock and Roman Reigns if that were to happen at Mania, because I feel like the story has been so well told that that is like the natural evolution of the next phase of the story, because I feel like all of this is positioned for Roman to, once this title run, be looked at as the greatest of all time. And if you continue to have him not only beat all of the current stars, but, you know, you have him beat so many of these legacy acts, and then, you know, if he were to, you know, he faces The Rock and defeats him, it's like now you're just further staking that claim for him being the greatest of all time. And then on top of that, whoever does beat him is so much more made. But the one thing I will say, I don't think that The Rock stands to feel that resentment. But I think that if it's not The Rock, and like say Cody comes back and wins the Rumble, I can see that fan resentment coming Cody's way if it's not Sami Zayn being put in that spot. So what do you kind of feel about that? And then I'll kind of build after, you know, you guys respond.
Yeah, Cody is an interesting name in the mix. How quickly we kind of forget, or, you know, he's just part of the past with everything going on with the bloodline. But I mean, you just mentioned his name, and it's like all of a sudden all these possibilities pop up for him to interact potentially with the bloodline in some way. I mean, we have all these options with Sammy and KO against the Usos. You got Sammy in a match at the Elimination Chamber in Montreal, or in the chamber itself, or in a different match, you have the possibility of Sami Zayn and Money in the Bank. But when Cody shows up, then suddenly you're like, oh, wait a second, that adds options for so many people. And, you know, Seth brought him up last week, but, you know, you'd think they'd have to solve their issues, but with Seth as a baby face and Cody coming back as a face, that could just get in the way of things. So maybe they just, you know, kind of let that slide for a while because Cody gets preoccupied with something else. But anyway, your thoughts, Darren, on Cody and everything else Jay just brought up.
Yeah, I kind of had forgotten about Cody, but yeah, that would complicate matters a little bit because I think that the fans would have more affinity for wanting to see Sammy getting that shot, so they'd have to tread very carefully with that. If they were insistent on Cody getting that shot, you'd almost have to have the Sammy Owens reunion so that people would accept that and want to see that reunion, to see them get revenge on the Usos. That's probably the only way you could do that without Cody getting booed out of the stadium. But a very good point that Jay brought up.
And I want to say, too, because we're, you know, a lot of people people are bringing up different things that are being reported in terms of potential matches. And I know that stuff is out there. And there's a mix of guesswork and logical connecting of the dots mixed with sources. And sometimes those sources are accurate, and sometimes it's flimsy hearsay within the company. And it is hard to sift through that, especially when you're in the Paul Levesque era where he's feeling things out as they go. You know, this idea that they have anything locked down. I mean, how many matches have we heard were going to happen at the Royal Rumble or rumored for WrestleMania or even the Elimination Chamber where the story changes, even within the story you're reading online or a week later? So it's like, what is a plan? A plan is an idea that has been brought up or a working plan that has a 50-50 shot of being changed. And sometimes we just know, but there's so many good options right now and things are changing based on crowd reactions and ratings performances and the timeline of people getting healthy and people staying healthy. And yet what's different right now is I don't think there's great fear that something that is planned won't happen, because if something that you hear rumored is planned doesn't happen, it's because two or three other possible good options happened instead. You know, and that's where, oh, yeah, it's going to be Sammy and KO against the Usos at WrestleMania. I mean, that's been rumored for weeks. Well, right, but in a few weeks, that can completely change based on the reception internally and externally to Sammy in the bloodline and a recalibrating of how long can we milk this before we pay it off? So I put that out there as a word of warning. Don't get too ahead of yourself and enjoy the ride. and no matter what you hear is planned, keep in mind how many times you hear that, and there's either a hedge within the story, or 2 weeks later you read, oh, that plan is off and it's for something else. The stuff gets blown out of proportion. It's fun to, you know, it's fun to hear those reports, but it also is so subject to change, and even people in WWE won't say with confidence that they know where they're going to be in January. I mean, is it going to be Sheamus and Roman? Is it going to be KO and Roman? You know, they might change their minds three more times between now and mid-December when they have to commit. Anyway, I'll throw back to Jake for any more follow-up.
Yeah, Wade, talk your talk, man, because a lot of these dirt sheet reports and all that other crap, man, like you said, it's all subject to change. I mean, these guys don't have to be accurate. It's like predicting the weather, you know what I mean? How much do you actually have to hit in order to be a weatherman? So, you know, I don't too much feed into that. I like to watch the stories play out, but I also read the reports that it's supposed to be Roman and KO at Rumble, then you get Sammy at Elimination Chamber, and I just don't see any way that it makes sense.
Yeah, that's the thing.
To put Sammy in the ring with Roman in just that short amount of a time with what we've just seen. Like, I think that it makes far more sense to me for Roman to face KO in Montreal, because that'll just be like, I mean, heroic for KO to be facing him there. And I think that, you know, you make KO an even bigger face. You know what I mean? And then I think maybe it makes more sense to me to have Sheamus face Roman at Rumble, because
Rumble.
I feel like if you look at at the Rumble, if you look at the way they position it, it's like, and I pay attention to these details, like they put Sheamus front and center on that promotional thing for War Games. So it was like intertwined. Sheamus has been being positioned, so they're like positioning KO and Sheamus at the same time for a title shot. So I think you just do KO. I mean, you do Sheamus at the Rumble, KO at Elimination Chamber in Montreal. I'm more so in favor, again, of Roman against The Rock at WrestleMania, and I push Roman to, if he's going to lose anytime soon, I'm not having him lose until at least SummerSlam, because now you give him a 3-year title reign. You know what I mean? You can make somebody at SummerSlam, but, like, I don't think Mania is the time to end it. I don't think you should rush this. There's so much going on with the Bloodline. Just keep building, man, because it's the best story we've had in decades, it feels, man. So, like, I don't know why people want to rush to end it just so that they can be upset with whoever wins in another month, you know what I mean, after Roman loses and everybody's going to be clamoring for Roman to get it back. Like, fans are so fickle, man. If you book too much for the fans, you'll become one. So, you know, keep it on Roman as long as you can keep it, because another thing, I know I'm kind of long-winded with this, but I'm somewhat passionate about it. If this is the first time in a long time that the title, not only Roman as the top guy, but the title is the top prize. Normally you have a situation where it's like these big name guys, and then there's the title on the other side, where it's like, I always hate this notion that, oh, these guys don't need the title. He doesn't need the title. Like, no, everybody that's on top should have the title. The title should always be the focus. And the title is certainly the focus with Roman on top. Whenever Roman loses the title, it probably won't be the focus again, because Roman will still be the focus even without the title, because that's how big he's gotten. So why not keep the title on him as long as possible and keep the title as the focus, man? So you know, I'll kind of end my piece there and let you guys really build upon some of the other things I said, man. But I love what they're doing with the Bloodline, and I don't have any real feeling or want to see this thing in no time soon, man. So thanks for having me, Wade. You're phenomenal as always, man. And you know, I know I don't call too often on Monday nights, man. Those are later nights for Main Event Jay, but I had to give a call tonight. I had some time, so you know, I'm a SmackDown caller, Wade. You know that's when I usually call. But you know, I'm happy that I was able to get. I'm happy I was able to get on tonight, man. And thanks a lot for having me, man. I appreciate everything you do, Wade.
Thanks, Jay. Really appreciate your kind words and contributions to the show. Yeah, the idea that WWE is going to blow through Sheamus against Roman at the Rumble, or Kevin Owens if they bump Sheamus, And then Sammy versus Roman at Elimination Chamber because it's Montreal, which would be amazing if they do it, but it'll also be so soon. It's just too soon. You can go to Montreal and a year later and it'll still work. And then we get a whole year of Sammy and the Bloodline. And then maybe that's pushing it. I don't know. And then The Rock. And then what are you left with? You know, we bumped Sheamus from the Rumble, so then it'll be Sheamus against Roman. Like you don't want a letdown. You know, and the issue is, how do you not only pay off what's going on with the Bloodline, but not have a letdown after the payoff? And how do you pace it so that you don't, drag it out where you're like, okay, get on, it's like Sting in the rafters. It's like, come on, let's get on, let's move to the next thing. And you don't want to be that promotion that's scared to pull the trigger on and instigate enact, I guess, better word, the main events that people most want to see, because you're fearful that you don't have anything left. But you have Sheamus, Owens, Sammy, Rock, and then you have Jay, Solo Sikoa. You can go back to Drew McIntyre. Oh, remember Cody? We forgot about him again.
Yes.
We forgot about him again. And by the way, Seth has been talking about Roman. So,
you can't forget him, right?
No, I mean, it is honestly a year and a half list of big Roman Reigns matches. You know, you can do rematches. You can do, war games type stuff where it's not one-on-one. That then leads to one-on-one. There's so many. And then, and from there, who knows? Is Braun Breaker ready ever? Is he somebody in the mix? I mean, you can go through the roster and be like, all right, then this person will be ready, that person. But let's see, 1, 2, 3, 4. I mean, that's like 7 names, I think, of people. That's a year plus worth of Roman matches. All of them are fantastic. Now, some of them include the Bloodline breaking up or people splitting off from it, and you may want to take your time with that, but maybe not. That's up to them. They're the ones who spend every waking hour talking to each other and thinking about this. Paul Levesque, the writers, and everyone involved in the Bloodline, including Paul Heyman, who's booked his own company and written SmackDown and has seen, a lot of storylines over the years up close and studies this business. And certainly he's got, his say and influence on the pace of things. So, I mean, you can click all those articles you want. They're written by people who are paid based on pulling the most compelling, writing a story that can have the most compelling headline. And there's not a lot of vetting of those. And you can read them and it's fun and it spurs conversations like this. But don't let that get in the way of just enjoying a spoiler-free experience watching this all play out, and enjoy it for what it is too in real time as it happens.
Right. Yeah. It's going to be a fun ride. So whatever direction they go. And I have confidence in this team. I mean, look at what they've done so far. So I think they'll follow up well.
I mean, honestly, like if you rank the Roman Reigns matches you're most looking forward to, I think if you asked like 30 fans, you'd get every order possible. Rock, Sheamus, KO, Sammy, Solo Sikoa, Jey Uso, Cody Rhodes. Like is that 7 or 8, whatever it is. I think you would get people going, I want to see Cody the most. I think other people would be like, I've been waiting forever for Sheamus in a match like that. It's been a while and he's on a hot run. And I think like Solo Sikoa, it's so intriguing because they haven't revealed much about him yet. And of course, Sammy and KO and The Rock are at the top of the list. It's like, there's so many cool matches for Roman, and they're all just, and Seth too. They're just, you're waiting for the right time to pull the trigger on them, and they're going to make them all count. And, Roman is going to have a historically significant and memorable title reign, even if the density and frequency of title shots isn't at the level of some of the other great champions.
Right. And I don't know, did you say Jey Uso? Because remember, they had a good series of, a good series of matches, and you have a whole nother backstory now to have them, if they were to rematch and have another feud. That's compelling as well.
We're deep into the show. We've only talked about the Bloodline, and there's like so much else on the show that we're going to talk about too as we go. But it's a good position, and it's fun. And some of this Paul Levesque inherited, and some of it is making the right call since he took over, and calling some audibles and for good reason, reconsidering and reconsidering some ideas. Okay, let's get to our next call. You can also get in line still. The phone lines are open, 347-215-8558. When you call, push 1 on your keypad, and that lets us know that you want to be on the show. All right, Brad in Florida is up next. Brad, thanks for calling. What's on your mind about Raw tonight?
Hey, thanks, Wade. You know, I wasn't going to press one, but Jay, in, I believe in Michigan, right? He was the last caller. He compelled me. Yeah, he's great. I always really enjoy his calls. And he had said, you know, that he's not tired at all of this and with Roman. And I have to completely agree with that. I mean, it is really hard to envision, like, what would even be next. Like, okay, Sami Zayn, the fans love him now. Somehow he wins the title. Then what? I mean, Roman always, there's always a compelling angle to seemingly everything he does over the last few years. And it's just been really, really good, and I am not ready for it to end anytime soon either. But I had to bring this up to you, Wade, because it's my only opportunity to do so. I really wanted to talk to you after the show on Saturday night. Greg was on. That was great. But I have to bring this up. Going back to Survivor Series, those were the stupidest rules in the entire world for that War Games match. And I really want you to try to, like, convince me otherwise that those were good rules. Like, the equivalent of waiting for – first of all, we made a big deal over the man advantage, right? The woman advantage. Wow, they're going to have the advantage in the match. This is a big deal, right? We're having SmackDown matches for it. We're having Raw matches for it. It ended up being completely and utterly meaningless, the most meaningless thing of all time. You couldn't do anything until all 10 people were in the ring. And then I actually thought they were going to keep with some sort of Survivor Series tradition and make it like an elimination where, you know, you go from 10 to 9 to 8 to 5 to 3, and then maybe you have a 3-on-1 situation at the end that is relatively compelling. Instead, we get a situation where I guess the equivalent that I could give is you play a four-quarter football game. It's the Vikings versus the Lions. The Vikings in the first four quarters go up 24-0. That's the way the game ends. But doesn't matter at all because we're going to play in overtime, and the first team to score in overtime wins. So whatever happened when the first nine people were in there meant absolutely nothing other than time completely wasted. And it was the dumbest rules. It made no sense. I thought it was a really stupid thing.
Okay, so here's the difference, a key difference. First of all, this is how War Games was back in the 80s. The Match Beyond, they called it, is what began after the progressive entry. So the idea, the defense or the explanation, the genesis of the format was there's this match that's going to happen. It's 5-on-5, two rings in a cage. They used to have a roof over it. And everyone's going to be trapped inside. But the soldiers are going to go to battle in waves. And you, before the match officially begins, you have to decide strategically who's going to go in first and try to beat down one of the opponents before the match officially begins and take as much physically out of them as you can to give you that advantage once all 10 are in the ring and the bell rings. The advantage counts because the team with the advantage has a 2-on-1 advantage for that number of minutes before the sides get evened out. I mean, the dumbest part of the War Games is that they don't rotate the advantage or they don't just send two people at a time to the ring. Like, you know, that's how it would be in, like, if it were real sports. It's silly that there's this idea, oh, you have to only send one at a time and rotate where there's a 2-on-1 and a 3-on-2 and a 4-on-3 advantage. That's kind of silly. That's part of the creative license that, you know, you have to kind of afford the promotions when they're doing this match. And so the idea is if you have the advantage that you spend all the time before the match officially begins having a one-person advantage multiple times in the lead up to it so that when the match begins, you're fresher and you're more likely to win. So that's the idea behind it. They also were telling the story, you know, of, you know, who gets sent to the ring at one time. And like Sammy was the second entrant for the heel team. And how much is he going to help Jey Uso when Jey was in trouble? And that was part of the story. So, you know, was it Butch and Holland were double teaming Jey for a while. And then Sammy came out, and the reason I think they wanted the babyfaces to have the advantage is so that Sammy could come to the aid of Jay, who was vulnerable in a two-on-one situation for a while, and then Sammy could help Jay, and that built up the story of the hug later. So I think it makes more sense. Darren, you can comment on that, and then I'll throw back to Brad, who I did mute because there was some background noise.
Okay. Yeah. In theory, that's, you know, you're supposed to get that a man advantage. But to Brad's point, once everybody got in, then the two sides did do the standoff thing. And that was kind of dumb, kind of because it didn't play into the spirit of one's team is supposed to have an advantage. It was like everybody was refreshed. So I could see where you're coming from on that. That was kind of ridiculous. Like, we're starting all over now. What was the point of the prior thing if everybody's just having the standoff? So they could have done away with that, but I get it for dramatic purposes or whatever.
I think that's a fair criticism. Like, I think if the heels have a disadvantage and when the match begins, you know, one of the heels who took a sustained beating when the numbers disadvantage was present were barely able to stand up. And the announcers are like, see, that's where it's so important to get the advantage because, you know, Jimmy is so beat down from that sustained period when, you know, he was outnumbered by Drew and Ridge and Butch. If you told that story, that works. Now, I think they decided not to do that because they didn't want the heels to seem sympathetic. You know, so I think they just decided to hit the reset button. It's not perfect. And my defending it is more, this is why they do it the way they do it. I think that's the original intent. And obviously, part of this, Brad, is just the novelty of seeing, wondering, it's like the Rumble, the countdown. Who's going to come out next? Who's going to come out next? And having everyone in the cage, you know, separate cages, and then deciding, you know, who's going to come out. It just adds some sort of, you know, superficial excitement to what isn't exactly a sound set of rules if you're just trying to decide who's toughest. But then, you know, the Royal Rumble is dumb too because, you know, if you are hanging from the ropes but you don't hit the floor, you land on the ring, if you jump onto the barricade and run back in and you can hide under the ring in a battle royal and then come out at the last second. I mean, there's all kinds of creative license things we're supposed to look past. And so, you know, that's sort of part of it. But you don't want to push it too far. Brad, back to you for your rebuttal.
Yeah, I mean, wait, look, I understand where you're coming from. And I do understand everything that you're saying and all that. It just, to me, I think in an event like Survivor Series where you've had such a lineage and such a tradition, to not pay homage to it in some sort of elimination fashion, I mean, how compelling would it have been at the end if, you know, Drew, Sheamus, Butch, Ridge Holland get eliminated and you had, you know, basically solo, and you ended up with, you know, Jay, Jimmy, or Sammy, Jay, and Roman against Kevin Owens. And he's looking around, oh, my gosh, I got no one left with me. Oh, wow, what am I going to do? The crowd would have been really into that. And the other puzzling thing on the entrances that I found was, even though you did the entrances at the beginning, why didn't you have the music come on for the guys when they were entering the ring? It just kind of felt when they left the cage, I'm sorry, to come in. Like, I think if we're going to play music during a run-in, you know, Bianca's coming in the ring, here comes her music, and then she's in 2 seconds.
Yeah.
We can't play it for Roman walking from the cage slowly to the ring, or we can't play it. The Usos' music didn't even play last night. It didn't even, or I'm sorry, it's Survivor Series. You know, so I think that kind of took away some of the dramatic element to it, not playing the music and just having kind of the silence as they walked from the cage to the ring. But I had to bring that up. And look, I just think there should have been some homage paid to the original Survivor Series format in some way in that match.
Yeah,
and I think it would have ended up a lot cooler.
I think Brad, if they blended the Survivor Series and War Games and augmented the rules, I mean, they could have done that. The reason they don't, and it's, I understand it, is they don't want a bunch of main event people who are worthy of being in War Games submitting or getting pinned. You know, I mean, they want to save those for when they really count. And so I think they'd rather have one person tap out or get pinned rather than seven people or nine people. That's a lot of people doing jobs, a lot of big names, quote, doing jobs in a match. So, you know, there's different things that influence why they do what they do. And sometimes they go, you know, it's like, I think it's really dumb that they show wrestlers for no reason walking backstage. And then suddenly they get accosted from off camera by an interviewer who just, you know, they just happen to be filming this wrestler and the interviewer just happened to be standing by. It's like, it's dumb. It doesn't seem real, but, and I would make a different decision personally, but their rationale for it is, We want to show a wrestler, not an interviewer. You know, like if we just show someone going, we're, you know, being approached by, you know, this wrestler and we're going to get a word with them, they think that makes for less compelling television than just showing the wrestler and then suddenly an interview pops out and accosts them with a question. So I aim for more believable structure and over the idea that, oh, our viewers are so finicky or fickle that they'll just tune out if we see an interview standing by waiting for a wrestler to arrive for an interview. So they, but the thing is, they make these choices all the time and they have their rationale. Brad, anything else?
Yeah, I was curious, you know, Dakota Kai took another loss tonight. You know, obviously she was the one who was pinned in the Becky Lynch situation at Survivor Series. She comes right back Monday, takes another loss. Do you think, to Candice LeRae, I mean, do you think that she is, I don't want to use the word getting buried, but is there kind of a separation that you see happening where damage control might not be a thing anymore as much as where maybe they're making Dakota and even EO look a little weak to kind of just get Bailey on her own and get out of that situation feeling like it's not working?
Darren, what do you think? My brief take is I think they need people to lose matches and they want to build up Candice, and Dakota's not the leader of the group. She's not in an imminent storyline where she needs to be credible against Bayley or another top babyface. And I mean, as someone who advocates for brave booking and clean jobs, I don't want to be part of the group that then goes, why are you burying that person every time there's a clean job on television? I don't think it's a burial. I think sometimes you win, sometimes you lose. And it's the bigger picture that counts, not, you know, just the current view that they have of Dakota's value is different than where it might be in 9 months. But I don't think they're losing. Or being on the losing end for a couple of matches is a reason to think that they're going to abandon or move away from it. So, yeah, Darren, your thoughts.
Right. Well, I had thought about that earlier, and I think the mentality is that she's still part of the tag team champions, so they think when you have a title that you can afford to do a few jobs and it doesn't tarnish you too much. So then I think that's the WWE thought process, so she can afford to do those jobs is what I'm thinking. And, again, they kind of have her slotted where – you know, she's kind of the backup for Bayley, so she's going to be dropping some of the falls when those kind of situations arise. So I don't necessarily think it's a burial because she is, again, part of the tag team champions. But that's just kind of her role, is to lose if somebody, maybe they had plans for Candice and she's making a big comeback. So that's an impressive victory for her to get a score a victory over the one half of the tag team champions.
Brad, back to you.
You know, I just couldn't believe it tonight when AJ Styles is out there and we get another. I thought it was over. I thought we finished this at Survivor Series, but let's keep going. I think they're good performers.
Yeah.
I just could not believe that it wasn't over yet. I thought we were going to get someone else to challenge this OC group, who, by the way, to me, has still not showed any reason why we should be invested in them. But, you know, the Carl Anderson and Gallo, especially them, I'm not talking about AJ Styles, but I just could not believe that that happened again. I was like, are you kidding me? This is, again, are we going to get another 2-3 months of this? I mean, this is unbelievable at this point. I mean, people criticized Vince and said, oh, he's doing the same matches over and over and over again. I mean, this is honestly becoming ridiculous at this point, in my opinion. I wanted to hear your guys' thoughts on that. And if you could comment on the Austin Theory Seth Rollins segment, because I really did think that was a very, very, very good segment. I thought Theory was great, and I thought, you know, Seth looking insane, but I thought he was great too. But really, that OC thing was wow.
Yeah. So, I mean, you made, you know, your points, Brad, on the OC Judgment Day thing. So I'll throw to Darren. I don't have a lot to add to that, but I definitely want to talk about Seth and Theory. I mean, there was a number of things we're talking about on the show we have not gone to yet. So we will do that. Darren, your thoughts on the OC Judgment Day extension. And I, as an aside, the eight-man tag match, and I'm like, three men and one woman against three men and one woman is not an eight-man tag match. I mean, I know Becky's the man, but you know that's different, and she's explained why. I got a kick out of that, and I got a kick out of Dominic because Dominic is so awesome in his role. But Darren, are you exasperated like Brad?
Well, sure, of course, but this is just a consequence of them having a smaller roster to deal with. Sure, they're bringing back a few people here and there, but this is just one of the consequences that when you have a roster like that, you're going to get these repetitive feuds and matches. So I didn't necessarily want to see that happen, but I'm not at all surprised that it happened, and would not surprise me to see it go on for a couple more weeks, unfortunately. I don't think we've seen the last of it, but I don't know, maybe we'll luck out. But I don't know what the natural progression is for either faction. So it would surprise me to see this keep going.
Yeah. As for Seth and Austin Theory, again, some really nice, I don't want to even say, I was going to say subtle touches, but deliberate, the way it was filmed, the way like nothing was left by chance. And again, I'll be critical of WWE for micromanaging segments if they seem micromanaged in a way that's counterproductive to the ultimate goal of the segment. But and I don't want to turn everything into AEW versus WWE, but the micromanaging of the body language and facial expressions and everything is just thought through. Austin Theory, everything he's doing, his facial expressions, his intensity, his insecurities, it's all it's like it is part of the plan. These are, you know, talk about, you know, offensive coordinators in the NFL having the whole first series drawn out in a football game. And then after that, you know, you kind of see how the game goes and you make some calls on the fly based on how the other team is defending you and who's having a good game and who isn't. Like WWE, they have their opening drive, so to speak, planned out when it comes to some of these segments. I mean, the looking past each other and the beat and the rhythm of Seth, you know, adding the word kid at the end just to get under the skin of Austin Theory, who declared he doesn't want to be called kid. I mean, it's just it's deliberate. It's planned out, but it works. And, you know, when he said, I've only got one thing left to say to you, when he leans in and he gets near his ear and goes, congratulations, kid. And then Theory's eyes bug out. And then Seth goes, what's the matter? You know, it's just like it's so well done. And I, you know, AEW doesn't have the staff. They don't put the thought or the effort into these segments. I mean, and I used to be an advocate to a degree for this, you know, just put down some matches and promos on a 3x5 note card and let the wrestlers do their thing. But that doesn't mean you don't critique them and refine them and give feedback and improve week after week if something isn't done really well. And I don't think AEW has that attention to detail. WWE does, and right now, some of their top-level performers, and even Theory, I would say, is a top-level performer in terms of showing that nuance, and he showed that in NXT, and it's one of the reasons that, you know, he was eyed for a push by Vince McMahon, and why, you know, Paul Levesque has come around on this too. He's really good at what is asked of top WWE wrestlers in the WWE structure with their TV schedule and their ring style. And this was a real good example of why if you have had your stock in Austin Theory, it's good stock to hold on to. Darren.
Yeah, I thought the segment really clicked. If I'm not mistaken, I could be wrong. Was that Theory's longest talking segment that he had to carry by himself before Rollins showed up?
Oh, interesting. I mean, it was lengthy enough for him to say a word that's not a word, unescapable. He meant inescapable. just got to pick on that a little bit because it came up on spell check. I'm like, yeah, escapable is the word, not unescapable. And then I rewound. I'm like, oh, yep, he said unescapable, which I'd forgive him for if it was like the cadence of three other unwords, but it wasn't.
Sure.
But anyway, you ignore me and my the editor and me coming out. I notice these things no one else does. But yeah, I mean, it was long, but it didn't, I don't think it belabored anything.
No, I was just saying that, you know, it takes a lot to carry one of those long talks and segments.
Yeah, yeah.
And I thought he rose to the occasion. And then once Rollins showed up, you know, Rollins, of course, is a veteran, very polished. And it's probably tough to stand toe-to-toe with him on a promo segment. And I thought Theory hung in there. I haven't always been his biggest supporter or anything, but I thought that he hung in there and went toe-to-toe and was just as good as Rollins. And the kid thing was good. I think the kid thing is going to become a thing where, you know, maybe he gets chanted that by fans and people keep bringing that up, his opponents. But
it's not
catchy.
Like,
yeah, I don't know.
Fans try to start doing it, like kid. It doesn't quite click.
Well, maybe they'll have signs or something, but I could see his opponents taunting him with it since it really got under his skin, and I'm sure that was by design. So, yeah, I think he did very well in a very long segment, so it bodes well for him, and I can kind of see why they wanted to get behind him. I'm starting to gradually understand better.
Yeah. I mean, he showed it in NXT that he had the, you know, acting chops, the wrestling acting chops. You know, he's a ham for the camera. He's very expressive. He's got natural timing, but is it just comedy? And, you know, there's a clear, deliberate pivot to him being serious now. And it's working. You know, he's not a guy where you're like, oh, yeah, you're trying to be serious, but you can't. Like, Miz sort of has that problem. Miz, isn't, you can't take Miz seriously. There's not, you know, if you know, like, yeah, it's just, he can try to want to be taken seriously, and it looks like a goof trying to be taken seriously. Theory is pulling it off, and, you know, they're giving him the next big thing style push, and, you know, part of that is him as a heel not wanting to be next. He wants to be now. It feels natural. So I was a big fan of that segment. I'm still, you know, a little confused about Seth as a babyface, and, you know, fans love singing his song, but man, is he obnoxious. And, you know, it's working well enough, but it feels, as always with Seth, he's a better heel than a babyface outside of the ring. He's a better babyface than heel inside the ring. And it's just a constant struggle. And he's sort of circumstantially a heel or a face based on what they need at that time, which is not great, because, you know, no. Like AJ Styles and TNA, you get turned too often. Samoa Joe, Kurt Angle, Big Show is probably the most notorious, Lex Luger in the 90s. You know, there's just people who get turned way too often, and it undercuts their persona. And now they're turning a babyface because the fans like to sing his damn song. Like, there's no other
ridiculous
reason.
Yeah. And for storyline purposes, doesn't he have to remain heel at least until Cody comes back? Because are we just supposed to forget that?
Well, he brought it up, and I mentioned that earlier. I wonder if they're going to punt on that and save it, because I don't want to see Seth. I don't want to see Cody come back and have to face a popular heel. Like, that's not fair for Cody. He had to deal with that, and he had to deal with that in AEW with Malakai. And I mean, so that, you know, Cody's, you know, nightmare, pun intended, is to come back and is getting booed against Seth Rollins when he's supposed to be the babyface, and Cody can be like, can I go back to AEW or things? Well, I, you know, so. We know how that story goes, so WWE's got, hopefully they're cognizant of that. Cool. Brad, I will unmute you and just see if there's any follow-up you want before we move on, because I know we addressed your two topics.
No, thank you, guys. The last thing is just the crowd I thought was very good tonight. I mean, I don't, you know, it wasn't Clash of the Cap crowd, but I thought they were a lot better than a lot of the previous Raws and even SmackDowns. I thought they were, you know, like a 7 out of 10, 8 out of 10. I thought there were some points where they were very, you know, everyone was standing, they were into it. I just thought Norfolk had a really good crowd tonight, and that's something that is always good to see, because when you have a show like that Wilkes-Barre or Wilkes-Barre crowd from a few weeks ago where, you know, it was New Day and the Usos, and they were just sitting there the whole night dead like a funeral, that was not good to see. So it always just adds so much when the crowd's into it, and I thought that was a factor in tonight's show, and that's about it, guys. And thoughtfulness and the time. And, yeah, we'll go from there.
Thanks, Brad. Appreciate it. All right, our phone number, if you want to give us a call still, is 347-215-8558. When you call, push 1 on your keypad. That'll play you on the switchboard, and then we can bring you on the show. You can also still email us, wadekellerpodcast@pwtorch.com. If you have questions for tomorrow's flagship edition with Rich Fan, then you can give us drop us an email, wadekellerpodcast@pwtorch.com, and you can email about anything that you want. All topics are on the table. All right, let's go to Kyle in Baltimore next. Kyle, welcome. How was your Thanksgiving?
It was good. I was, you told me that already on Friday, but it was good.
Oh, that's right. Yeah. We talked to you Friday, so never mind that. Here, Kyle, what was on your plate? What was on your Thanksgiving plate? I didn't get into detail. Did you have stuffing?
No, I don't eat that. I just had ham and greens and mashed potatoes, I think. Yeah. So pretty much.
Cool. All right. All right.
Yeah.
So what's on your mind about Rob?
So I wanted to get to a few things about is about a few women, about Becky, Bianca, and Rhea, because watching Becky Lynch tonight, she is super over, super, you know, and really the biggest star in the company beyond, you know, beyond Bianca. Because to me, it's kind of still, I'm going to be kind of harsh here, but to me, when it comes to Becky Lynch and Bianca Belair comparing the two, I'm almost to the point where if they're not going to put Becky on SmackDown anytime soon, because it seems like they need to be separated, because to me, you know, Becky's super over with the crowd, and granted, because she was gone for a while, but people would still want to cheer for her anyway. But, and so I just feel like, to me, that this, and the interaction with her, Bayley was good too, and I thought they're going to have a pretty good feud heading in, you know, whatever that's going to happen. But it seems to me, though, that it's like, you're watching War Games, it wasn't until Becky came in where the match ended up being good, because the match wasn't all that great, and up until Becky entered the match, where that's when the match was excelled to be great. So I would say that the Bianca Belair experiment, I would say, as champion, really has been a complete failure. I heard someone else even talk about this before, about Bianca's title run, how has been not all that great, because her feud with Bayley wasn't, I mean, the ladder match with Cody Rhodes was fun, but Bianca, the feud has been all that great. And then just her as champion throughout this entire year has been very dull, not all that interesting, and you know, everyone wanted her to be the champion, but when she was the champion, she has done nothing interesting as champion. Now Becky has been, will be bigger and better than Bianca Belair compared to the crowd reaction and the way she's been booked as well. So what do you think about what they've been doing, how they brought Becky back, what she's doing now with Bayley, and how they're whatever to do it with Bianca, and it looks like Alexa too, because she's looking at the title like, okay, I'm going to take that title from you, because so type of thing. So what do you think about that situation?
Well, I think we saw the difference between Becky Lynch and Bianca Belair tonight. Becky came out, owned the crowd, went in with the crowd, interacted with a couple fans. She might have regretted one of them who got a little handsy with his hand around her shoulder, and then she took a couple steps back and never got close to him again. He had the lack of inhibition and demeanor that is often associated with somebody who's been drinking from early, you know, mid-afternoon or whatever. But, I mean, she owned the scene. And she didn't just walk to the ring and go through a set series of motions like Bianca Belair does. Becky felt real. She felt like she was having a good time. She felt like she was letting loose and feeding off the crowd in a genuine way that had room for improvisation. And I don't think anything I just said applies to much of anything that Bianca Belair has done this year. And it's unfortunate. You know, Bianca Belair should have had a breakout 2022. And instead she's been saying, and girl and EST and twirling her braid and doing the same routine, where if you looked at her from the rafters down and she was just a blue dot, she does the same thing. She, like, the blue dot moves to the ring, stands on the apron, turns, spins around, looks at the crowd, twirls, gets in the ring the same way. It doesn't feel, you don't connect to that. It's a video game entrance. And her promos are just, you know, platitudes and buzz phrases that are part of her gimmick. And I hope she grows from out of this. But tonight, the contrast to me was real apparent. Becky Lynch is a babyface, knows what she's doing, and she went out there and owned that arena, Darren.
Yeah, and I hate to say it because I'm a big supporter of Bianca, but you could just see the difference when she did that backstage promo. It's just the same formula, lines and everything. When I see her like on outside interviews, like in mainstream interviews, she's very compelling when she breaks out of that character. I don't know if it's them telling her to do that or just because, I mean, she's relatively young in the business. If she thinks I need to stick to the script and not show my real personality, I don't know which of those two things it is, but they need to bring more of her natural personality out and maybe let her improvise a little bit.
Because I see how Rhea Ripley is within her character. And it came up the same exact same exact way. It's like the skill role that Rhea's doing is like 10 times better, whatever Bianca's doing. So it's also that situation as well.
No, that's a good point, Kyle. Rhea Ripley is leapfrogging Bianca Belair in a key way, which is seeming like she's reacting to the moment and fully engaged in what's going on. And connecting with the audience, and obviously her character is very different, and what's being asked of her is very different. But I mean, from a stock standpoint, you know, Ripley stock's going up, and Belair has kind of hit a ceiling. You know, and Bianca's going to be 34 years old around WrestleMania next year. Like, this is not like, oh, maybe in 5 years, you know, give her 5 years to get better. Rhea Ripley, you can give her a few years to get better. Austin Theory is 8 years younger than Bianca Belair. You know, you can take your time. Belair should be a finished product right now, despite, you know, how late she got into wrestling and how recently she's been on the main roster. I would think somebody who's had the life experience she has and being in her 30s, that she would have better instincts or have grown more by now. And, you know, the warning signs were there early, and yet she just kept doing girl, EST, twirling the braid, the same steps in the ring, and the same kind of body, you know, the body language stuff. And she just leaned too hard on that. And, you know, I was listening to I don't know if it was 5 or 10 years ago when I was putting up one of our flashback episodes, and I made the comparison to Brad Armstrong from the 80s. He was like this bland baby face and never got a huge push. You know, he like was North American champion in Mid-South and, you know, he had little runs here and there, but he was a bland personality. And I was shocked to learn he was the life of the locker room. He cracked everybody up. And I was like, what? What? Like, as soon as the red light came on, he was bland and boring. But everyone talked about how they just loved sharing a locker room with him and traveling on the road with him because he was so funny. It's like, tap into that. So, like, sometimes the on-air character, it's just, it's not, you know, Bianca has it in her. As you mentioned, Darren, there's been signs of it. Find a way to get her to shift into that mode on TV. And it might be she's doing what she's told and just wants to get the paycheck. And she's, you know, she doesn't trust her instincts or doesn't trust, you know, revealing more of who her real self is. But I think her growth as a character and her value to WWE increases the more that she breaks away from kind of the rote routine.
I agree. Yeah.
And props to Rhea Ripley. She and Dominic are fantastic and playing off of each other so well. And I've talked for years about it. One of the things I love most about wrestling, more than dives and chanting "We want tables," I love wrestlers on journeys. I want to follow characters and I want to see them grow. I want to see them react to their circumstances. I want to think that they're in a different place now than they were a year ago because of what I watched them go through on television. And you know, we're seeing that with Rhea Ripley. We're seeing that with Dominic. I want to see it with Seth. You know, it's his character's so weird. That's kind of weird. I want to see it with Cody when he comes back. We're seeing it with Austin Theory. I want to see it with the Street Profits. I really want Montez Ford to not just fall into the same, you know, routine that he's in. I want to see Chad Gable grow. I don't want to see him. He's entertaining in this role, but, you know, Jason Paul is advocating for it over at ProWrestling.net tonight. You know, get him more of a push. Treat him more seriously, too. It's to me, it's the journey. It's not just throwing good matches out there and a bunch of moves. It's the story and their place in wrestling and their quest to achieve their goals and react to setbacks. And right now, Rhea Ripley and Dominic are delightful, and they're completely different than they were 6 months ago. And you can't say that about Belair. Kyle, back to you. Anything else you want to add?
Yeah, I mean, it's just true. It's been, and I've been super down on Bianca, and a lot of people have been talking about me being super down on her. But the fact is, I've been watching these shows for months and weeks for years and years. Since Bianca came to the roster, it's been evident how she's not really a that great of babyface or something as a character. So it is in the situation that she's been put in. But anyway, I wanted to talk about with Roman Reigns and this whole title run and all this stuff too, and how it's just super bland and not, it doesn't interest me. And I said before, it feels like that the whole Sami Zayn, Kevin Owens thing is such a distraction that we just focus on this thing and not the fact that Reigns is champion for this long. And my thing is this, is that if it's going to be, if there's a beat attached between Kevin Owens and Sami Zayn versus the Usos, fine, whatever. I don't really care really about that. That's all well and good, but you still have Roman Reigns as the champion. And look, I can care less for Cody Rhodes to take the title from Reigns. I don't know if he's going to be coming back anytime soon. I mean, that was a different injury from Becky. I mean, his was a torn pec, and Becky was just dislocated. So it's who knows when he's coming back now. So, but this entire reign of Roman, I'm thinking to myself, okay, who is he supposed to be? Who is he supposed to face in a logical sense to put it at, the Rumble at WrestleMania and all that stuff? So I was, you think it would have been Seth Rollins because he's super over with the crowd now. He's out, I guess, if you listen to the crowd, he's a baby face, but his character is heelish. So it's a weird dynamic. So he can go back to do that again. Because like Kevin Owens, that's fine. That's there too. I think that's kind of more likely for the Rumble, possibly. But they have what are they going to do in the next, throughout the entire month heading into the Rumble? Because the Rumble's not until the end of January. So in terms of how they're going to make this interesting and how much they could do and have Sami Zayn be a part of this for how long and for what reason. So I just think, what's going to happen with Roman Reigns in this title run, and how more interesting can he really be, honestly, after really being champion for 2 years and not really have anyone credible for him to face, just get over Sami Zayn and what he's doing, but it's about him and not about Roman Reigns. So what do you think about that dynamic and how long the entire, for the rest of the month, how they get to the Rumble, they go to drag this out for? How long can they keep doing this for? I don't know.
Well, I have enough going on in my life that I don't want to stress out about trying to figure out WWE's problems entirely like that. I trust that they're spending a lot of time thinking about this, and we'll watch it play out. Like, now, I trust WWE in this Bloodline storyline. I trust that with the multiple players that they have and the way that they can, just mix and match them in different ways, both behind the scenes and in the ring. There can be a 3-week story arc where Jay starts doubting Sammy's trust and then Sammy, regains it. There's all kinds of cards that they can play to keep this interesting. I'm not worried about it. If my full-time job was to worry about it, then I was sitting around with the people involved in that, batting around ideas, I would have ideas. And I think there's plenty of ways to fill the month of January with it. But I'm in a position where I get to sit back and watch and then comment afterwards. And so that's kind of where I am on that. But, I wouldn't say that about everything, but the Bloodline storyline, it's been, Reigns and the Usos and now Sammy and Solo, it's just, they've been doing well. So don't stress.
I guess the only reason why I kind of bring it up, because I hear other podcasts are talking about they are really sick of this story of what they're doing with Reigns and all that stuff, and I can't. Even though I tried to ignore myself, I just saw the people talking about it. I was like, well, yeah, that's just that. And I do try to ignore it because there's others that I admit to, whoever, now Becky's there, now do it with, whoever to do it with the women's division. So and all that stuff. But, you know, I guess it is what it is. So it's up to, you know, just wait for
everyone,
that.
Kyle, everyone's entitled to their own opinion, but if somebody's bored with Roman Reigns, then, you know, there's a lot of podcasts you can choose to listen to. That might, I mean, you can, I mean, whatever. I don't want to, I don't know the context,
I mean,
but
that,
come on. Come on.
It was to a point with this title run. That was the situation. But that's the only one podcast I'm listening to from it. I mean, there's other, you know, but that's, but anyway, yeah, I don't know. It's just that. But so I was just thinking too that also about the women's tag team championships itself. Why do they still exist? I'm starting to now question why they brought them back, because Io and Dakota are, I enjoy both of them a lot. I think they're both great. I kind of enjoy Io a little bit more than Dakota, but they're both great. I was thinking to myself, can Io go back to a singles wrestler and face Asuka one-on-one, because their interaction at War Games was fun and I enjoyed that. So I was thinking to myself, could she go back to being a singles wrestler and all that stuff? And what do you think is going to be next for these tag team championships? Are they going to get rid of them again? Because they've done nothing since they won the titles back from Alexa and Asuka. So I don't know. What do you think? Can't just go all back right, to right. be a single star.
Yeah. So I think when you have a three-person faction and you have a clear leader in Bayley, I'm totally fine with having the other two be in a tag team. I mean, it works totally fine for me. But WWE does, Darren, have a history of ignoring or not prioritizing secondary titles for stretches of time. The U.S. and IC title has certainly been through that at various times, probably the women's title too, but certainly the tag team titles are not always going to be a priority. But as we looked at, we've got December and January with no pay-per-views on the schedule, no PLEs on the schedule right now. Maybe that's going to be time to do something with those. And that'll be a chance for them to get a second or third from the top, you know, quote, main event type match on TV going forward. But, you know, they don't spend as much time building up the women as they do the men. You know, and I think that's defensible based on the depth of the rosters at this point. So I'm not too worried about it. Darren, how about you? I if they ignore the titles for a while or don't prioritize them, I don't think you have to get rid of them. I'm fine with there being, I guess at this point, you know, should there be two separate singles women's champions would be more of a question given what they're doing with the bloodline. Darren, your thoughts?
Those titles, secondary titles, are sometimes going to go on the back burner, and that's fine. I think we'll see. You can always build up some team. I mean, you always have that tier that has like Aaliyah and Lacey Evans and all those types, and you could, you know, make a makeshift team, build them up, give them a few wins and challenge. So that'll happen eventually, but they're dormant for now, but they'll make a comeback. There's no need to eliminate them because you can always make some kind of storyline that'll make them relevant again. So
yeah, Kyle, I wouldn't be too worried about it. I mean, I get your frustration, but just because they're not paying attention to them now, I mean, they can later, and I'm okay with there being, you know, WWE hasn't overdone it with titles, and I'm glad that there is a division for women who maybe have talent, but they just don't have the talent to be singles wrestlers carrying matches themselves to be in something that feels important.
Yeah, I do like the tag team champs and stuff, and the concept of it. I just think it's you know, they just need to have more like at least a good, at least maybe like six teams maybe to make it seem credible. Now, not just one team and another mystery team.
Yeah, you're not going to get
having
that.
All that stuff. But, well, yeah.
If they have a separate women's show on Peacock, you know, maybe you'll get six tag teams. It's going to max out at three or four. You know, we'll cross both Raw and SmackDown. I mean, they're not going to tie up that many women in the tag team division. And, I mean, they're just the way that they covet minute-by-minute viewership numbers. They're going to put the big stars on TV. They're going to be totally worried about losing viewers if they put, you know, the fifth-level women's tag team in a match on TV. They're not going to trust that people are going to stay tuned. You know, I mean, they're not going to have that level of depth. Like, I mean, in a perfect world, they would, and if they had a separate weekly women's show on Peacock, and I don't know if it would just be patronizing to have a separate women's show at this point. You know, I mean, we might be past that. it being a thing, but maybe there is a need for it. I mean, I think there's a worthwhile debate that you could have about that, but that's about the only way. So if they could find a way to make revenue from having more depth in the women's division, you know, but otherwise, you know, I mean, maybe in totality, if you count NXT, then you're just only looking at, you know, two teams on Raw, two teams on SmackDown, two teams on NXT, you get up to six, but that's still spreading them out quite a bit. And some of those women are going to be in singles matches. They're not going to have then a whole separate roster of singles women too.
Yeah, I guess so. I guess the last thing I'll talk about too is again, when you talk about Austin Theory and Seth Rollins, I thought, you know, their back and forth was good and everything. And I enjoy Theory now even more. I always like Theory thing now and like him even more, him being more serious and more in Rollins' face, and then having Rollins more serious again too, because I forget how Rollins is sometimes when he actually cuts a really good intense promo, not having this laugh and being super silly or whatever when he actually have a serious promo like that, like he did with Theory. I thought was good. I want to see more of that from Seth, and I don't know where Rollins goes from here. Maybe he'll be still probably feud with Theory throughout the rest of the year, and then whatever he's going to be doing in the Rumble, who knows. But I just enjoy him being the serious side. I want to see him doing that moving forward, but that's it. They struck off.
Kyle, before you go, I want to get your thoughts on Dexter and Miz. We haven't talked about that yet. What do you think? What do you think of what they did?
I never really cared about this entire feud. I thought it was a waste of Dexter Lumis' time, I felt like, because it's like, well, what's the point of this? And also a waste of Johnny Gargano, because I thought it was like, when he came up, I thought it was like, okay, great, he's going to be feuding with Theory, or he's going to be feuding with Seth or something like that. But he's been doing this thing with Miz where since he pretty much came out to Raw, it's like, can we move on from this? And, well, he actually blend into the storyline with Dexter Lumis, and Miz is like, why? So now that Dexter's now finally on Raw, that's fine. I just need everyone to move on and have them feed him with someone else and not keep going with each other. Like for next year, I need Johnny and Dexter to move on from Miz and feud with someone else, or be a tag team, or do something. They could either be a tag team or just feud with someone else separately in their own ways, because the thing with Miz has been dragged out for months, feels like, and I need it to end, and hopefully this is the end of it. So that's how I feel about it.
All right, cool. Thanks, Kyle. Good to hear from you. Darren, same to you. Okay. What do you think about Miz and what do you think about Miz and Dexter and Gargano in this chapter tonight? We haven't talked about that yet.
Yeah, this feud hasn't helped anybody, and I think it, in fact, brought the Miz down. I was like, isn't this beneath the Miz? But, yeah, it hasn't helped Gargano. Hopefully this will wrap up everything, and this will be it. The match itself, I mean, it wasn't my cup of tea, but I will say this. At the end of it, when they did the angle and Miz stole that bill back from the little kid, I laughed so hard. That redeemed everything. I thought that was so funny. And I just wonder if that was planned or what, but it was so funny.
I got a kick out of the kids who were screaming for money, and Dexter just walked right past them, like, you know, that's just traumatized. And I like the one
awkwardness.
Yeah, and then one boy got the $100 bill, and they like holds it up to the light, like you're at, you know, you're buying liquor at the liquor store. And I go, is this a real $100? Like, where did he learn that?
What are you doing?
But I mean, if you're a kid, you don't think a wrestler's going to hand you $100, so of course you're going to be skeptical. But, you know, like, I understand that. Oh, I shouldn't say of course, but, like, I can understand being skeptical with real money and wanting to confirm it.
Yeah.
I thought he was going to
bring out a marker and start or something.
Oh, that would have been classic. So I think where we're headed is Gargano and Dexter against Gable and Otis. I think that's coming up. That's my guess.
Yeah. Okay. Well, anything's better than this. So.
Yeah. I don't know what Miz, what's up next with Miz, but boy, the statement, this is below Miz. Wow.
That speaks volumes. Exactly.
Yes. Trying to think if there's anything else that we haven't touched on. Actually, let me, as you're thinking about that, I'll read Zach Zach says, gentlemen, it was very nice of WWE to start the show with Becky Lynch so I could see the man do her thing and avoid sitting through Theory, Dominic, or The Miz. There's nothing like Becky holding court in the ring, or in this case amongst the fans, is there? She's such a natural babyface, and the fans just love her. Her holding off all three members of Damage Control by herself is some GOAT stuff. I feel bad for Bayley because Damage Control has just been defined down at this point, but Becky needs some strong wins on her path to once again send Ronda out of WWE at WrestleMania. Darren, anything more you want to add on Damage Control and Becky?
I'm just glad to see Becky back in this role because, I mean, she did well with the whole Big Time Bex thing, and it was fine, but you were fighting the tide of the audience. She's just one of those performers that people just love to get behind and support, and this is back in the natural flow of things. So I'm glad to see it, and I think she'll just skyrocket from here.
Breyer from Kansas, home of the Kansas City Chiefs, says, aren't they from Missouri? Anyway.
Yes.
Breyer would know. Do they share them? Maybe Kansas and Missouri share them equally. I had a couple questions regarding Raw tonight. First, what do you think about the first hour going commercial-free and then going side-by-side, the split-screen breaks the rest of the night? It's a ratings thing up against a weaker-than-usual Monday Night Football game, at least in terms of the records. I think it was Colts and Steelers. Maybe they thought there was an opportunity to get a little pop coming out of the holiday weekend and Survivor Series, and they've dabbled in the split-screen commercial breaks that AEW does regularly. They've dabbled in that before, but not consistently. It's a bit of an experiment. It's harder for me in my job because those breaks are nice because I can, type up the analysis and that kind of
exactly.
thing. So, yeah, you know about that. But they can't do it a lot because, they make their money off of the commercials. But
right.
And he says, other question, do you think it would have saved a lot of time in the first match to make it a six-man instead of having the DQ finish during the Yim and Ripley match? I always find it kind of annoying when that happens, and it would be more convenient by not having a DQ all the time just to set up another match after. That is a bit of a booking trope of WWE to have a match and it ends in a no contest, and then we just add ingredients and restart it. I mean, it's something they do. I don't have strong feelings either way on it. If it went away, I wouldn't say, why you get rid of that? But there's a certain flow to things when a match ends prematurely or without things being settled and the people who got involved just end up in the match. So I'm fine with it, but, to me it's like a once every 8 to 10 week thing as opposed to every third week. I don't know what the cadence is. Maybe someone will look that up. Darren, how do you feel about that?
Yeah, I thought it was something that maybe they had added before they figured out this was commercial free because that's the natural place where they throw in the commercial. So, but yeah, it just seemed very blatant, like, oh, this is where the commercial would normally go. But yeah, I get tired. It's a cliche and I always roll my eyes when let's have an 8-man tag match. I'm like, oh, great. But yeah, just do the thing from the start and cut out all this foolishness.
Yep. Anything else you want to bring up from the show? Anything in your notes or any stray thoughts?
I'm looking at my notes. I think we hit everything pretty much.
Cool. All right, well, we'll wrap up there. Darren, just tell people about your contributions to The Torch, how they can read and hear from you.
I'm the Impact Wrestling Recapper. You can catch my recaps right after the show or usually the next morning, and I do a podcast recapping it as well. And if you want to contact me, you can find me on Instagram at DKLSTL.
Excellent. Thanks, Darren. Great talking with you again.
Good talking to you. Thanks for having me.
Yep. Thanks, everybody, for listening. Thanks to our callers, our emailers, and we'll talk to y'all Wednesday night, or actually tomorrow on the flagship with Rich Fan. So join us then.